The history of art is filled with evolution and revolution. A particular art form that stands out in the long history of art is, of course, Renaissance art. This short period of time, a period which essentially everyone knows about, produced some of the most magnificent pieces ever constructed. For example, the Renaissance brought us the Mona Lisa, the Last Supper, the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, multiple David sculptures, the creation of Adam, the Vitruvian Man, the Birth of Venus, among many, many others. This period reminds me of one of my favorite periods in world history, the Amarna period and the following Ramesside period of ancient Egypt. The Amarna period was characterized by a significant and sudden break from classical Egyptian art, when Egyptian art and culture basically exploded. But granted, only for a period of time, basically during the lifespan and specifically the ruling of Akhenaten, the unique pharaoh of ancient Egypt who converted ancient Egyptian religion and art into monotheistic religion and non-liberal art, respectively. More reminiscent of the Renaissance, yet still different, of course, was the Ramesside period that followed the Amarna period. The Ramesside period restored prior Egyptian art. This period could be defined as a rebirth of classical Egyptian art. The Renaissance, while being more so a cultural rebirth than a state-sponsored rebirth, was a return to, or even a rediscovery, of classical Greco-Roman philosophy, literature, and art. Renaissance art is, of course, a significant portion of this chapter, of these two episodes. It'll be discussed in the next episode. But in this long double, this will be two episodes, in this double episode mini-series, European art, notably European art from the Middle Ages to the early 19th century, basically, will be introduced. But some of this art, specifically neoclassical art, goes all the way into today. And Gothic art, neo-Gothic art, is still very popular. I actually just toured the University of Chicago, which is my top college, by the way. And I found that there is still quite a love for neo-Gothic architecture, for just Gothic architecture in general. It's similar to a Renaissance rebirth of Gothic architecture, which is just very interesting. Classical art includes the long list of medieval or Middle Ages art, which includes Byzantine, Anglo-Saxon, Viking, Romanesque, and Gothic art. Gothic, of course, we're specifically talking about architecture for Gothic art. Of course, there was Gothic painting and Gothic sculpture, but the most important and the most renowned form of Gothic art was Gothic architecture, and it still exists into today. And of course, the following art styles of the Renaissance, Baroque, Rococo, and Neoclassical eras will be discussed, but those will be in the next episode. Medieval art denotes art from the Middle Ages, a period that began with the fall of the Roman Empire around 500, not quite, but around 500 CE, and ended with the Renaissance and the Age of Discovery around 1500 CE. The Byzantine Empire, sometimes referred to as the Eastern Roman Empire or as Byzantium or Byzantium, was the continuation of the Roman Empire in Eastern Europe and the Middle East following the fall of the Western Roman Empire in 476 CE. The capital city of the Byzantine Empire was Constantinople, named after the Roman Emperor Constantine the Great. You may know him because of the Colossus of Constantine, a Roman sculpture that we discussed in the last episode on art, on the episode on Roman art, which would be 51. But Constantine the Great declared Constantinople, priorly named Byzantium, the capital of the Roman Empire, referred to as, quotations, New Rome, on May 11th, 330, following the fall of the Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire was unequivocally the most powerful economic, cultural, and military force in Europe, and Constantinople was consistently the richest and richest history city in Europe. That is, of course, until the fall of the Byzantine Empire. In 1453, the Byzantine Empire would eventually fall to the Ottoman Empire. At this point, the Roman Republic, later the Roman Empire, as of 27 BCE, which existed for over two millennia, would cease to exist. And of course, Byzantine art refers to the art produced in the Byzantine Empire during the 1,058 years of the Byzantine Empire's existence. The Byzantine Empire combined Greek influence with the influence of Christianity, notably Eastern Orthodox Christianity. These features were apparent in Byzantine art, with the influence, of course, of Eastern Orthodox Christianity being especially profound. Major distinctive eras in Byzantine art include the Age of Early Byzantium, the Age of Justinian the Great, the 7th century crisis, there seemed to be a lot of crises, the crisis of iconoclasm. Of course, iconoclasm is the attack of, or the act of attacking cherished beliefs, Macedonian art, the Comnenian Age, and the Paleologan Age. The Edict of Milan, issued by emperors Constantine the Great and Licinius in 313 CE, allowed public Christian worship, more openness to Christianity, essentially. And subsequently, the advance of Christian art in the Roman and later the Byzantine Empire would, of course, follow. The Edict of Milan was followed by the dedication of Constantinople as an Eastern Roman city, which created a new artistic center in the Eastern Roman Empire. Rival cities such as Alexandria, Antioch, and Rome would later fall to the Arabs and the Goths, establishing Constantinople's supremacy as the preeminent major city of the Roman Empire. Constantine the Great wished for excessive decoration of the new capital city, of course, because it's named after him, and it's basically his dedicated city that will keep him in history for the rest of the human existence. But of course, Constantinople. He wanted Constantinople to be decorated. With this, many churches, ancient statues, and future building projects were completed in Constantinople. And of course, the city became the 4th century version of Dubai, United Arab Emirates, because, I mean, Dubai, it's pretty obvious. Dubai is, of course, characterized by rapid urban development, and of course, the same was for Constantinople. Actually, I would like to think of how Indonesia was apparently supposed to be moving their capital city because of climate change. And, of course, that's a real threat in Oceania, in southeastern Asia. Of course, I can understand that's a threat. But that will be characterized by extreme urban development itself. It's a very expensive plan that's going to basically create a new city, of course. Obviously, for the right reasons, because Jakarta is just going to be underwater at some point because of climate change. But still, it's similar to what we're seeing with what we were seeing about 1,700 years ago with Constantinople. Not quite. It would be 1,691 years ago, to be exact, because that's when it was dedicated. Actually, a little bit more than 1,691 years ago. But yeah, basically, that's Constantinople. That's why it's so similar to Dubai. Major urban development. The future reign of Theodosius the Great, would create another urban building project, cementing Constantinople as Europe's foremost city, foremost urban area, and foremost urban enterprise, because it was I feel like if for 330 CE, that would be a very strenuous project, very arduous feat. The early ages of Byzantine art featured the creation of important manuscripts, notably those of the poets Virgil and Homer. These are specifically called illuminated manuscripts, which have these interesting decorations on them and everything. They will be presented many times in this episode and in the next episode as well. Early Byzantine art also included the cultivation of ivory carving, And also the carving of animal teeth or tusks. Justinian the Great was a Byzantine emperor who devoted much of his reign to conquering Italy, North Africa, and Spain, laying the foundations to totalitarianism in the Byzantine Empire and forcing his religious views on all people of the Byzantine Empire by law. Quite the tyrant, I call it tyrant, but it's they say tyrant, he was. A significant characteristic of his reign was the massive building project that accompanied it. After the Nika riots, or the Nika riots, a week-long riot against Justinian the Great that saw half of Constantinople burn down and tens of thousands of people killed, Justinian the First renovated, rebuilt, and founded new churches, notably Hagia Sophia, one of the buildings destroyed during the Nika riots. They also continued ivory sculpture in the Byzantine Empire with ivory sculptures such as the Barberini ivory and the Archangel ivory created during Justinian I's reign. In the 7th century, which followed, of course, Justinian the Great's reign, Byzantium was characterized by political decline and attempted invasions by a number of civilizations. With the political and religious tumult in Constantinople, most projects from the 7th century were undertaken outside of Constantinople. The century embraced a new art form, which was known as Icaro Poeta. I may have that incorrect, but that is what I personally pronounce it as. Or icons made without hands is another, basically, that's basically what it means. Pieces characterized as such came into existence miraculously, quote-unquote, without any human intervention. While these pieces were almost undoubtedly created by humans, they were quite important, for they are often credited with saving Byzantine cities from military assault in the 7th century. A Byzantine iconoclasm represents a fervent debate over the role of art in worship in the Byzantine Empire. Iconoclasm was a policy that was likely enacted during the reign of Constantine V in the 8th century, and in the 8th century CE, and iconoclasm remained until 843. The Council of Hyria under Constantine V forbade by law the production of icons of Christ in 754, so it basically occurred for 89 years. The crisis of iconoclasm virtually erased religious art, with some periodical exceptions, for nearly a century. But secular art was not wholly limited in production. Most of the few pieces that come from iconoclastic Byzantium were secular. Macedonian art features art produced during the fall of iconoclasm and during the Macedonian dynasty of Byzantium from 867 to 1056. During this period, ivory sculpture flourished and new churches were commissioned, each incorporating the new standardized Byzantine mosaic style. The Komnenian Age of art refers to art produced during, of course, the Komnenian Age, the age encompassing the Komnenian dynasty from 1081 to 1185. The emperors of this dynasty embraced the arts and spread cheaper art mediums such as frescoes and icons across the empire. The Paleologan Age features the Paleologos dynasty, a dynasty that reigned over the Byzantine Empire from 1261 to 1453, essentially from the recovery of Constantinople following its takeover by the Latin Empire to the final fall of Constantinople to the Ottoman Empire. The period was characterized by new interest in landscapes and highly detailed narratives, which were present, of course, in mosaics and frescoes. Notable works from the Byzantine Empire include the many ivory sculptures such as the Herbeville Triptych, the Barberini ivory, the Archangel ivory, not to mention the eclectic architecture of the Byzantine Empire with works such as the Hagia Sophia and the Hagia Irene. Anglo-Saxon art refers to art produced in the Anglo-Saxon period of English history. The Anglo-Saxon period refers to, of course, the historical period in England and Wales from 450 to 1066, so 616 years of history. The Anglo-Saxons were responsible for the creation of the Kingdom of England and, of course, the birth of the English language, which currently owes about 26% of its words to the linguistic development by the Anglo-Saxon. And of course, but more notably, the 26% of words in modern English attributed to the Anglo-Saxons included the vast majority of words used in everyday English. The Anglo-Saxons produced a variety of art forms, specifically illuminated manuscripts, manuscripts that featured decorations, such as borders, initials, and illustrations, among other things. Germanic animal style and unique Anglo-Saxon style metalwork, monumental sculpture, notably monumental stone sculpture, which is present in stone crosses and gravestones, ivory carving, of course, this preeminent sculpture form before the reemergence of classical monumental sculpture and textile art. Metalwork from the Anglo-Saxon period was originally of the Germanic animal style, which emphasized animal motifs designs. But however, the Anglo-Saxons would eventually develop their own unique metalwork character. For example, the Quoit brooch style that originated in Anglo-Saxon England featured a Quoit brooch. A brooch is an ornament that is fastened to clothing. The Quoit brooch is an ornament that is comprised of a broad ring or circle with an empty center. This was really popular from 5th century England and Wales. The Anglo-Saxons often preferred round disc brooches over the continental styles of fibulae, referring to the oblong brooches that served practical purposes in continental Europe. Surviving monumental stone sculpture in Anglo-Saxon England and Wales are in the form of stone crosses. It is believed that many of the monumental sculptures were once painted, but the paint has since faded away. While stone sculpture is the only surviving monumental sculpture form from Anglo-Saxon England, wood was likely used far more than stone. However, of course, because of wood's organic properties, one could expect that most wooden sculpture would be gone. Actually, only one wooden piece of art, if one considers a coffin art, still exists. That is, of course, the Cuthbert's coffin from 687 CE. A monumental sculpture often featured some design in the form of reliefs, but the reliefs were not of the highest quality. They were not finished with great precision and have been, for the most part, weathered away. A small sculpture, particularly in the form of metalwork and ivory carving, dominated Europe, including, of course, Anglo-Saxon Europe, before the reemergence of monumental sculpture. Most Anglo-Saxon ivory carvings came from the ivory of marine animals, such as walruses and whales, which were imported from the north of the British Isles. One of the foremost works from Anglo-Saxon England is the early Frank's casket, a whale's bone chest from the early 8th century that features many intricate relief carvings that evidently attempt to cover a general history of the world. The most recognizable work of Anglo-Saxon art is the Bayeux tapestry, an embroidered cloth that is nearly 70 meters or 230 feet long and 50 centimeters or 20 inches tall. This depicts the events that led to the Norman conquest of England, the 11th century of England by an army from various provinces of France. Viking art, also known as Norse art, refers to art produced by the Viking civilizations, the settlements of Norsemen and Vikings in Scandinavia. Viking art pertains to the settlements of Norsemen and Vikings in Scandinavia during the Viking Age, a period from 793 to 1066, where the Vikings raided, colonized, conquested, traded in Europe, and traveled to North America. Of course, Columbus was not the first, my friends. Leif Erikson Day in the United States is October 9th every year. If you want to celebrate the actual European discovery of America, celebrated on October 9th. Instead of Columbus Day to commemorate someone who didn't really discover America, celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day instead. And you can also celebrate Leif Erikson Day just a few days before. Viking art holds elements in common with Celtic, Germanic, Romanesque, which is after the Viking era, and Eastern European art. Each style phase of Viking art has a unique name and is in chronological order. The Osberg style describes early Viking era art. This style follows the style of the Osberg ship, a well-preserved Viking ship that is brilliantly decorated with many Viking motifs. The Bore style refers to the geometric interlace and knot patterns and the animal motifs from the late 9th and early 10th centuries. The style name refers to the place where the style was first recognized, and this is, of course, the Bore Mound, near a mound cemetery near that same city, the one that's named Bore in Norway. The Jellinge style, or the Jellinge style, refers to animal art produced in Viking era Scandinavia during the 10th century. The animal designs of this style were often stylized and featured band-shaped animal bodies. The Mammon style refers to the intricate decoration on an axe recovered at a wealthy Viking's burial site in Mammon, Denmark. One side of the axe features a large bird, and the other side of the axe features a large motif of leaves. The Ringerike style refers to reddish sandstone that was used for carving stone that bore the style itself. The Ringerike style itself is the Scandinavian art style of the 10th and 11th centuries that was characterized by motifs of lions, birds, band-shaped animals, and spirals. The Urns style characterized the final phase of animal art in the 11th and 12th centuries during the Viking era, and subsequently, of course, the transition from Viking era art to Romanesque art. The Urns style is characteristic of, and I quote, slim and stylized animals that are interwoven into tight patterns. Notable works from the Viking era include the Stora Hammerstones, Viking Age image stones from the 7th century, another one is a plaque decorated with monster heads, another one is a wood animal headpost from the 9th century, and then there's a silver, gold, and nielo object used with an open ring brooch. Romanesque art refers to the art of Europe, and meaning basically all of Europe, from 1000 CE to the rise of the Gothic style. Not necessarily all of Europe, but a decent amount of it, a decent portion of it. The Romanesque style began in northern Italy, France, and the Iberian Peninsula, and spread throughout Europe shortly after. Romanesque art predates Gothic style art and architecture. Shortly after the rise of the Gothic style, Romanesque styles would shortly lose their place as the foremost art styles of Europe. Romanesque art was almost exclusively a painting, sculptural, and architectural style, specifically unique in metalwork, enamels, ivories, wall painting, manuscript illumination, and architecture. Metalwork, ivories, and enamels had a very high status in the Romanesque period, even more so than paintings. In the Romanesque period, metalwork became far more sophisticated. For example, shrines of the time, such as the Shrine of the Three Kings in Cologne, Germany, were covered with elaborate decorative overlays, as apparent in the Shrine of the Three Kings. The Shrine of the Three Kings, the preeminent shrine of the Romanesque era, is the largest reliquary container for holy relics in the Western world. The holy relics the container is traditionally believed to contain are the bones of the three kings in the New Testament. With the fall of the Western Roman Empire, stone edifices and bronze sculptures died out. However, architecture remained a prominent art form in Europe. The principal characteristic of Romanesque architecture was the semicircular arch. The semicircular arches of Romanesque architecture are present in vaults, which are self-supporting arches in the case of Romanesque architecture. These self-supporting arches are semicircular that cover a space, which is often the inside of a church with a ceiling. Windows and cloisters, covered walkways in monasteries, colleges or cathedrals, where windows and cloisters, they covered walkways in monasteries, colleges, and cathedrals. Romanesque architecture combines architectural styles of the Roman and the Byzantine empires into buildings with thick walls, round arches, sturdy pillars, barrel vaults. Barrel vaults are vaults with single curves that exist for given distances instead of multiple semicircular arches. Large towers and simplistic forms, which compared to Gothic architecture, you cannot see the similarity there. Simple forms versus Gothic forms. Romanesque architecture is instantly recognizable in the Maria Locke Abbey, a religious complex that is reminiscent of the castles housing Disney princesses. The focus of manuscript illumination was on the Bible, of course. The manuscript illumination of the Romanesque period was majorly in the form of the historiated initial, an enlargement of the first letter in a paragraph, section, or chapter. Illuminated and enlarged initials are common in literature today. Historiated initials are not as common. So specifically, enlarged initials are common in literature today. Illuminated, not as much either. The curving vaults of Romanesque architecture gave way to mural building and wall painting. A notable example is a fresco of Jesus Christ created by the preeminent artist of the 12th century Catalonia, and he was the master of Taul, or Tal. Notable works of Romanesque Europe, most of which are architectural, include the Maria Locke Abbey, the interior of the Durham Cathedral, and a miniature of St. John the Evangelist. Gothic art, of course, and architecture developed in northern France in the 12th century CE. Gothic art continued to develop into the 15th century and existed until the 16th century, during which it was subsumed into Renaissance art. Gothic art in this chapter will refer specifically to Gothic architecture and painting, for they capture and encapsulate the true essence of Gothic art. Gothic architecture, being that it is the most popular architectural style for the flagship building on an American college campus, is very easily recognizable. For example, the cathedral, or well, not really, yeah, the cathedral technically at the University of Chicago, the main building there, it itself is quite the Gothic form of Gothic architecture. It's Neo-Gothic, but it's still Gothic, inherently Gothic architecture. Several structural elements distinguish Gothic architecture from preceding and succeeding periods. Just like the semicircular arch was the principal unique structure of the Romanesque architecture, the pointed arch was the principal unique structure of Gothic architecture. Not distinctly a Gothic style, but the principal feature of Gothic architecture, pointed arches are arches characterized by pointed crowns. At the University of Chicago, they had pointed crowns. That's how I found out it was Gothic architecture, and then I looked it up, and indeed it was Gothic architecture. Another essential structure in Gothic architecture was the rib vault, a framework of crossed or diagonal arched ribs designed to support a wide open space that is not supported by center columns. Many Gothic columns followed the architectural style of Roman columns of the Corinthian order, whose capitals had brilliantly sculpted leaf motifs. Buttresses are built against a wall to support structure. Flying buttresses are buttresses that are arches which extend from the upper portion of an edificial wall to a pier with great mass, and this, of course, gives support. Often decorated, these structures added yet more beauty to the massive, formidable Gothic structures, some of which were the tallest buildings in the world for short periods of time. Gothic architecture was ever more imposing with the advent of towers, and spires into its style. The Gothic towers of churches were meant to convey a dramatic spectacle of great height, transmitting to churches that were easily the largest and most visible buildings in cities, and symbolizing humanity's aspirations to build up to heaven. I mean, literally. A notable Gothic tower is the Rouen Cathedral, or the Rouen Cathedral's central tower, which made it the tallest building in the world for 4 years. And this, but of course, this was in the 19th century. Tracery is an architectural device that incorporates stone bars over windows to create patterns and designs. Intricate patterns of tracery were commonplace in Gothic architecture, such as in the Beauvais Cathedral in Beauvais, France. It might be Beauvais, but I think it's Beauvais. Fresco in Gothic Europe was the main pictorial narrative craft, just as they had been in previous European art periods. Frescoes were particularly numerous on church walls. Traveling to your local church, you may enter and notice the beauty of the light from the sun inside the vault. Upon viewing, if you go to a church that is, whose inside is basically a vault, of course. Upon viewing this light, though, you realize that beautiful mosaic stained glass structures form the windows of the church, highlighting the sun's alluring beauty or pulchritude. Stained glass dominated glass art forms in Gothic Europe, contributing to some of the most beautiful church vaults in all of Europe, and frankly, all of the world. But granted, churches didn't exist in Indonesia or Australia at that time. Painting in Gothic Europe often took the form of biblical scenes, specifically the Madonna and her child, referring to a painting of Mary and her son, of course, Jesus Christ. Notable architectural works from Gothic Europe are the Chartres Cathedral in Chartres, France, the Reims Cathedral in Reims, France, the Notre Dame in Paris, France, Duomo di Milano in Milan, Italy, the Cologne Cathedral in Cologne, Germany, the Sainte-Chapelle in Paris, and Westminster Abbey in London. Some notable artists from Gothic art included Duccio Giotto, Simone Martini, Nicola Pisano, Pietro Lorenzetti, and Altichiero. These were some of the many artists from the final European era, technically preceding the Renaissance, which was arguably the greatest period of artistic expression in European history. The next episode shall transition into Renaissance and post-medieval European art, leading into the modern art of 1770 and later. But anyway, thank you all for listening, and as always, have a good morning, afternoon, evening, and night. Take care and stay curious.